This morning's reading is taken from the Gospel of Luke, chapter 15, verses 1 to 10. It can be found on 1048 in the Church Bibles, page 1048, Luke chapter 15. Now, the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering round to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Then Jesus told them this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and go home. When he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep." I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. Or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Does she not light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin." In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents.
Grace, thank you. Do keep Luke chapter 15 open in front of you, won't you? Today's the second in our series, looking at this chapter, looking at the three parables that Jesus tells about a lost sheep, a lost coin, and a lost son. If you were here last week, you'll know that Andrew introduced the series by knocking on the head a couple of common misunderstandings. We were reminded that the Pharisees weren't religious extremists. In fact, they were the mainstream, religious, moral, respectable people. And we heard as well last week that Jesus told these three stories to justify his priorities and his behavior in hanging out with the type of people that he did. Today we're looking at the first two of the stories. And I want you to imagine that you are there. Imagine that you're there. Imagine that you're in amongst that group of people that Jesus is talking to. Apart from anything else, it would be quite a unique group, wouldn't it? Chapter 15, verses 1 and 2. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering round to hear him, but the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered. This isn't a bunch of people that would have been together very often. On the one hand, there's the religious and the social elite, the well-educated, the well-thought-of, the morally upright people, the decent people in society. And on the other hand, well, there's the dregs of society. That word sinners in inverted commas that's used, Andrew told us last week, it's a technical term referring to people who were considered to be persona non grata in mainstream religious and social circles. They were the prostitutes, the lepers, Samaritans, and tax collectors, the dregs of society then. And you can imagine, can't you, these two groups eyeing each other suspiciously, taking care not to get too close to one another, not wanting to be seen together, hoping that someone they'd know doesn't happen to walk past at that moment. You can imagine, can't you, that the decent people looking down their noses at the dregs, at the scum before them. And you can imagine the sinners, that the dregs of society, in their minds at least, sticking up two fingers at the decent folk. Who are you to come around here and look down your noses at us? What are you looking at? And you can imagine the barely veiled hatred and animosity between the two groups. Imagine you are there. You're part of the crowd. You're either one of the decent people or you're one of the dregs. You choose. And there in the middle is Jesus. Imagine you're there as you hear the question, or rather the accusation that's raised. Verse 2. This man welcomes sinners and eats with them. Imagine you're there. What on earth is Jesus doing, hanging out with the dregs of society? Why is he showing his acceptance of them by eating with them? Doesn't he know what these people are like? Doesn't he know that these people have no regard for the things of God? Doesn't he know that these are people who'd never go near a church or a synagogue or the temple, let alone be let in? How can he expect us to accept him as a wise and a good teacher if he makes such appalling choices about the company he keeps? Imagine you're there as Jesus begins to answer the accusation by telling them these two stories about a lost sheep and a lost coin. And I want to suggest that if we were standing there, regardless of which group we've put ourselves into, we would be astonished by Jesus' answer. We would be astonished by what Jesus teaches us in these two stories about God, and we would be astonished by what Jesus teaches us about himself. So first, what Jesus teaches us about God, and it's this: lost sinners are valuable to God. Lost sinners are valuable to God. Jesus tells these two stories about something that was lost and the desperate search to find what was lost. I guess that these are stories that we can all relate to in one way or another. We've all had that experience of losing something important, some keys or a message or a document. And we've all had that desperate search to find what was lost. And of course, the more important or valuable something is, the more desperate the search. In the first story that Jesus tells, it's a sheep that's gone missing. Sheep is one of 100, owned by a shepherd. And for one reason or another, probably because the sheep's not very clever, it's wandered off and got lost. And Jesus tells of how the shepherd goes to find his sheep. And the overwhelming impression that you get is that, as Jesus tells the story, is that the sheep is really important. It's really valuable to the shepherd. Now, we don't know why. Maybe it's because this is a significant part of his worldly possessions. Maybe he'd worked out his margins, and the only way that they were going to break even that year is if every single sheep survived. Maybe it's a professional pride. I haven't lost a sheep yet. I'm not going to start now. Whatever the reason, it's clear, isn't it? This sheep is massively important. It's massively valuable. So valuable, verse 4, that it's worth risking the other 99 to go and find it. Verse 4, suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Does he not leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? So valuable that he won't rest until he finds it. So valuable, verse 5, that when he finds it, he's over the moon and he carries the thing home. Verse 5. And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. I don't know if you've had a close look at a sheep in the country recently. If you have, then you'll have noticed, as I have, that the last thing you want to do with a sheep is put it on your shoulders and carry it home. But he doesn't care. He's got his sheep back. So valuable that when he gets home, he throws a party for his friends and his neighbours. Verse 6. Then he calls his friends and neighbours together and says, Rejoice with me, I've found my lost sheep. It's overwhelming, isn't it? It's unmistakable. This lost sheep is exceptionally important. It's massively valuable to the shepherd. Jesus' second story about a lost coin makes the same point. This time it's a woman who loses a coin. This time, rather than being 1 in 100, it's 1 in 10. She has 10 silver coins and she loses one of them. Bam! 10% of her wealth, such as it is, wiped out. If it's easier to think of it in these terms, 10% of her portfolio wiped out in an instant. What does she do? Sit back and say, oh, well, it was only paper profit after all? Of course not. No way. She goes searching for it. Verse 8. Or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Does she not light a lamp, sweep the house and search carefully until she finds it? She lights a lamp so that she can see clearly. And then she sweeps and she crawls over the house, desperately searching every inch over and over and over again until she finds it. You can picture this desperate panic to find the coin, can't you? Why? Well, because the coin is massively valuable to her. And when joy of joy, she finds it, she throws a party. She's over the moon. This is brilliant news. The lost coin is exceptionally important. It's tremendously valuable to the woman. In the same way that the lost sheep was tremendously valuable to the shepherd. In the same way, says Jesus, that lost sinners are tremendously valuable to God. Verse 7. I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. Or verse 10 again. In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. The sinner, as we've said already, is someone who didn't want anything to do with God, who wouldn't have gone near a church or a synagogue or a temple, and who wouldn't have been led in anyway. A sinner is someone who's turned their back on God, who in terms of their relationship with God is lost. And Jesus says people like that are massively valuable to God, so valuable that in terms of the parable, God will do whatever it takes to track them down and find them and rescue them and bring them home. So valuable that when people who've turned away from God repent, that is, that turn back to Him and are found and rescued and brought home, well, then there's a party in heaven. Lost sinners are tremendously valuable to God. And that is an astonishing claim for Jesus to make. I realize that today, here, we probably, most of us know that. But remember, we're not here today. We're there, then, standing in the crowd. And as we listen to these two stories and begin to think, oh, they're nice stories, aren't they? But then we think about it and we realize what Jesus is saying. And it begins to dawn on us that what Jesus is saying goes against every single thing that we've been brought up to believe, regardless of which group we're in. Regardless of whether we're in amongst the decent people or the dregs. Because we've been told for as long as we can remember that God is interested in good and upright and well brought up and well behaved, religious and moral people, the decent people. And we've all been told that God, the holy and the perfect God, doesn't want anything to do with the dregs, the sinners, the scum, and the lowlife. And Jesus takes what we've all been brought up to believe, and He turns it on His head. And He says, actually, it's the dregs. It's the lowlife and the scum, the sinners, the lost, who God is bothered about. So bothered that God will do whatever it takes to get them back. And when He's found them and rescued them and got them back, then there's a huge celebration in heaven. Lost sinners are tremendously valuable to God. Imagine that you're there. And imagine that as you're there, standing there, reeling from this first astonishing claim, you begin to think a bit more about what Jesus has said. And now something else begins to strike you. Something astonishing that Jesus is teaching about Himself. And it's this. Jesus is the one who's come to find and rescue the lost. Jesus is the one who's come to find and rescue the lost. Notice so far, Jesus doesn't seem to have answered the accusation. The accusation was about what Jesus was doing, welcoming sinners and eating with them. But by way of answering the accusation, Jesus has told us about God, that lost sinners are valuable to God, and that God is in the business of finding and rescuing and bringing home lost sinners. And as we're standing there listening to Jesus, we find ourselves thinking, it's all very well telling us about God and what he's up to, but what about you and what you're up to? And then we begin to work it out. It's like that playground joke, isn't it? Which some of you may remember. What did the coolest person in the world have for breakfast this morning? Don't know? Well, I had a bit of toast and a cup of coffee. Some of you will work it out as we go along. Jesus has been telling us what he's up to. By telling us who God is bothered about and what God is up to, Jesus is telling us what he's bothered about and what he's up to. Imagine you visit Buckingham Palace as a tourist. We went last summer. It was excellent. Imagine that you're wandering around the state rooms, looking up at the pictures. You're looking up at a picture, and you become aware that there's someone standing beside you, also looking up at the pictures. And in an act of extreme un-Englishness, without looking at the person standing there, we start talking to them. What do you make of that picture? We say. And a voice beside you says, it's one of the Queen's favourites. You think to yourself, well, that's all well and good, but why has this person told us about the Queen? I want to know what they make of it. So we ask again, yes, but what do you make of this picture? The Queen loves it, comes the answer. They've done it again. I've asked them what they think, and they've told me what the Queen thinks. And then slowly it begins to dawn on you. Of course, this would never happen. But it begins to dawn on you, and you begin to recognize the voice. And you turn to your side, and standing there next door to you is the Queen. What are you doing, Jesus, hanging out with tax collectors and sinners? Well, God's rescuing them because they're valuable to him. Jesus is telling us that as he welcomes and eats with sinners and tax collectors, he's going about God's work of finding and rescuing the lost. Jesus is saying that him welcoming and eating with sinners and tax collectors is like a shepherd who leaves 99 sheep and goes to find the one that's lost so that the flock will be complete. He's saying that him welcoming and eating with tax collectors and sinners is like a woman lighting a lamp and sweeping her house and desperately searching for one lost coin until she finds it. Verse 10, in the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. Do you see, Jesus is saying that as he welcomes and eats with sinners and tax collectors, he's going about God's work of finding and rescuing the lost. Jesus is the one who's come to find and rescue the lost. And that's an astonishing claim for Jesus to make about himself. Now, it's not clear exactly how much Jesus is claiming. See, at one end, Jesus could be claiming that he is God. What are you up to, Jesus? Well, lost sinners are valuable to God. Lost sinners are valuable to me. God is in the business of rescuing lost sinners. I'm in the business of rescuing lost sinners. Two simultaneous equations. Jesus equals God. It's hard to tell whether he's claiming that much here. At the very least, Jesus is saying that he's doing God's work of finding and rescuing lost sinners. And by implication, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law are not about God's work. Imagine you were there. And let me ask you the question that I've avoided asking so far. Which group of people have you put yourself in? The decent or the dregs? Because whichever group we're in, our world has been turned upside down by Jesus' extraordinary claims. His claim that lost sinners are valuable to God. And his claim that he is the one who's come to find and rescue the lost. So are you amongst the decent, the upright, the moral, the religious, the well-behaved, the well-brought-up people? Because if you are, then Jesus' words come as a stark warning. Don't let your decentness exclude you from God's rescue. Don't let your upright, moral, religious lives fool you into thinking that you're not lost, that you don't need Jesus. Don't fall into the trap of thinking that you're one of the 99 who don't need rescuing, who doesn't need to repent. That's the great irony of what Jesus says, isn't it? The 99 who don't need to repent don't exist. Because by God's standards, we all fall short. We're all in some way or other turning away from God, no matter how moral or religious or well brought up we are. We all need to repent, to turn back to God. Don't let your decentness fool you into thinking that you aren't lost or that you don't need Jesus. Jesus' claims will cause us to rethink how we view ourselves. And they'll cause us to rethink how we view other people. That was the presenting issue with the Pharisees, wasn't it? Because if we understand that lost sinners are valuable to God, then we won't be looking down our noses at anyone. We won't be thinking that God couldn't possibly be interested in them. We won't be excluding people because we don't think that they're up to it. And of course, what's true of us as individuals is true of us as a church, isn't it? Wouldn't it be terrible if our decentness as a church got in the way of us or others being rescued by Jesus? Wouldn't it be a shame if St. Helens became a place where only a certain type of person was welcome, where a particular level of morality or education or social status was required before people were made welcome? Rather, isn't it great that there's a broad mix of ages and nationalities and backgrounds here this morning? Wouldn't it be terrible if St. Helens was made up of people who only ever mix with other people like themselves? Wouldn't it be a shame if someone came here on a Sunday morning and felt as though that they'd been looked down upon? Imagine in a couple of weeks' time at the week of talks, you've brought a friend along to one of the evenings, and after the main course, they sit back and say, "Is it all right if I smoke?" And someone else across the table says, "Oh, we don't do that here." It'd be terrible, wouldn't it? Or imagine that you're a visitor to St. Helens and you're talking to someone after the service and you mention something about yourself, where you live, or that you've just got out of prison, or the job that you have or haven't got. And you suddenly become aware that the person is desperately looking for an excuse to get away. It'd be terrible, wouldn't it? Imagine you're one of the teenagers sitting on the back row at the beginning of the service, chewing gum, which the youth worker's probably given them. And as people walk in, they tut and they frown, instead of smiling and saying hello as they do now. It'd be terrible that, wouldn't it? Lost sinners are tremendously valuable to God. What about if you put yourself into the group with the dregs? And I guess if we put ourselves in the group with the dregs, we all ought to, if we're honest, at least in God's terms. Well, if we are amongst the dregs, then Jesus' words are brilliant, life-changing news. Because Jesus wants us to know that sinners are tremendously valuable to God. Jesus wants us to know that God is in the business of searching for and finding and rescuing and bringing home lost sinners. And Jesus wants us to know that He is the one who is doing it. Jesus is the one who came to find and to rescue lost sinners. Do you realize the lengths that God has gone to rescue people like you and me? Do you realize how valuable you must be to God? Even if we've been a Christian for many years, we need to remind ourselves of this, don't we? Because even if we believed it at the beginning, it's very easy as a Christian to make the mistake of thinking that somehow it's my decentness that keeps me going with God. None of